Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahan, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Do you read Stephen King? Good news. There's a club for you. The Losers Club. Every Friday, us losers journey through the never-ending wastelands of King's Dominion. We sink our teeth into each of King's novels, dive deep into the lore, and review every adaptation. Even better, we're always having guests over. Thomas Jane, Will Wheaton, Mary Lambert, Mick Garris, the list goes on. So what are you waiting for? Join us as we read on through long days and pleasant nights.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an audio interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound and the Consequence Podcast Network. Hey, we put out interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Consequence of Sound, and would love to keep you up to date on all of those, so why not subscribe? Before we even get started, go ahead and get that out of the way. Obviously, wherever you get your favorite podcast from, you can subscribe to us on there, whether that be iTunes and Apple Podcasts, whether you're listening on Spotify or checking us out on YouTube. Hit that, and then everybody's happy. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest is Corin Tucker. You know Corin Tucker of Slater Kinney. You know Corin Tucker of Filthy Friends. Maybe know Corin Tucker of the Corin Tucker Band, or with some of her many side projects she's had along the years. She's one of my favorite people to talk to. I always feel so honored to get to catch up with her, and there is plenty to talk to her about, especially for what's happening this year. Filthy Friends. This is the band that she shares with Peter Buck of REM and Scott McCoy. They've got a new record coming out called Emerald Valley. She says, yes, it's an angrier record than their first one. There's lots of things to kind of take aim at. And she does it in a really great way, too, kind of taking her past growing up in the Northwest and the problems they faced back then and how they relate to today. And we're talking environments and politics and migration. And then we're also going to get an update on Slater Kinney. Of course, they sent a picture out earlier this year that featured the three of them with Annie Clark of St. Vincent in the producer's chair. So we're going to find out what those sessions were like, what we can expect that album to sound like, and how in the world she's going to do all of that this year. We'll also throw the clocks back to 1999 just for a moment to talk about the Slater Kinney record Hot Rocks and find out, in fact, that it actually has a thread to the new music. It's Kyle Meredith with Corin Tucker.
Hi, how's it going?
Well, I have so much to ask you because I feel like there's so much going on with you all right now. But let's start with Filthy Friends and this new record, Emerald Valley. I was so excited to hear that the new record is already coming and everything. And this sort of like this makes it real, right? It wasn't just a one-off project. Was there a point where it really started to feel like a band?
Yeah, I mean, I think on the first record we had more fun and got more out of it as a project than we thought we would. And we were just sort of realizing our potential when it was like, okay, tour's over. And, you know, and so I feel like we were already kind of writing a bunch of songs and thinking about like, okay, well, what will we do for the next record? So this record, I mean, it actually has taken us several years to kind of chip away at. And I'm so happy with how it turned out.
If you knew that it was going to happen, if you knew that there was definitely going to be a second record right away, when did the session start and what were they like?
We rehearsed, you know, a few times here and there and had like some material ideas. I mean, Peter and I, you know, we kind of get together in Portland and write and try out different songs. And, you know, he had some really cool ideas along with this long, weird kind of Zeppelin-y thing that turned out to be Emerald Valley. And I just started really thinking about that song and what we could do with it. And that kind of was like the germ of what was happening. And so we worked on that. And then we didn't really go into the studio until like last summer. We went into the studio here in Portland and we really kind of did it in a traditional style where we, you know, we did all the basics and all the vocals, I think, yeah, maybe within like 10 days.
You ever wonder how Peter Buck keeps up with all of the songs? Because, I mean, he's what, like five or six bands at this point, right?
I know. He's like a machine. I mean, the man is, he's always got like four new songs. He's like, oh, I want to show you this. And I have this idea, you know, like he just has one of those brains that's always kind of going and he's always playing guitar and thinking of things. And so
it's just amazing how many riffs must be in that man's head to keep up with it at any certain point, you know, to call out.
For sure.
Oh, so I don't know if, you know, I'm taking a lot, too, from Last Chance County, because coming from the other record, I mean, this was definitely, the first record was definitely a heavy record in plenty of the parts. But I wonder, is this, would you define this as an angrier record than the first time around? I mean, there's a lot of reason for it to be, if so.
Yeah, it's definitely angry. And it's really sad, too. You know, I mean, I think the record is really about where we're at. And I mean that sort of specific to the region, the Willamette Valley that we live in, and just witnessing the effects of climate change kind of firsthand here. And because I've lived here since I was 12 years old in the Pacific Northwest. And so, you know, I really remember what it used to be like and how it's changed and how sad I am that, you know, we haven't done more to, you know, protect the environment and, you know, and the people that really serve us here, you know, which have long been, you know, migrant workers in this area. A lot of people, you know, come up here from Mexico to pick the food and pick strawberries and, you know, other produce that we have here. And that's kind of the traditional way that our region has survived. And You know, I really think that we should think about, as a society, treat each other. Yeah. I think that we need to be really, you know, much more thoughtful about immigrants and migrant workers and the people that are that come here, and a lot of them stay and help create our economy.
Yeah, it becomes very frustrating for me. I mean, I'm in Kentucky. I'm in a, other than the Ohio River, I'm in a landlocked state. And, you know, whereas the internet's the promise of the internet was to make the world a smaller place. But it, you know, the internet seems like a great failed experiment in plenty of ways. But in one of these, that's very frustrating to me because, I mean, the environment is one of my biggest passions. And when you're not on the coast, you don't see it as much. And to have all of these people around me that just, you know, the word is deny, you know, they just completely flat out ignore that it's ever happened. It's fucking scary is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's outrageous. And I think the thing is that we're like living with the effects already, you know, like we were warned like, oh, you know, the climate is going to change. Like, no, the climate has changed.
Right.
The climate has, we are living on this like hotter, weirder planet. And we have to use that as, you know, as a fuel, as like as a impetus to make serious changes.
So, you know, we'll bridge that into the actual songwriting here, because, you know, to write topical is one thing and you could go very direct, but I sort of sense that the trick that you're pulling here is, you know, to use that poetry of seeing the past and kind of bringing it into the present and building it into more stories, I guess. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely try to do, you know, try to like paint a picture, you know, and almost think of it as like a collection of short stories, because I think that is really, you know, what people are drawn to in a song is what is the story of the song. And so for me growing up here and having such a visceral experience of this region, I tried to really paint a picture for people of, you know, what it was like to grow up here, what, you know, how beautiful it is here and how lucky I think we are to live in such a beautiful place. But show, I think there's definitely like a range of things going on. There's definitely, you know, songs about how concerned we are about the, you know, the change of what's happening as well.
Yeah, because I think the quote that I've read of you talking about Last Chance County is, you know, a teenage girl riding the bus through a depressed Northwest town in the 80s and the frustrations that you saw there. And I think that last point of that line was, I feel like, you know, a really important part, as you're pointing out right here, is to not paint it in those rose-colored glass lens, you know, filter or whatever, but to say, yeah, it was bad then and it's only gotten worse, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, for the lucky few who, you know, have like those super upper middle class jobs, conditions are, it is like this super great place to live. And it has all these wonderful restaurants. And like, I'm talking about Portland. But I think that there are so many working class people that did not get that, you know, that situation. And it was, you know, it has been really depressed. And I don't think that for those people, they are making the kind of living, right, the kind of like, you know, sustained workable living to keep up with the rise in rent and the rise in housing costs and everything else. It's just, it can't be so like have and have not as it is right now.
So going after these themes in this way, do you find that influences the type of music that you put behind it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we've tried to do, you know, it's definitely a rock record. And I think that we've really embraced that. But I think that we do try and do some different moods with it. Like Last Chance County is really like this fun sort of punky song that really came at the end of recording, which is, it's really funny. But there's a lot of really interesting moody songs, like this song called Pipeline that really is just a total mood piece. It's very kind of dark and slow. And that is something that I love about Filthy Friends, is that everyone is all in for a mood. You know, no one breaks out. Everyone is there to serve the song. And so if I'm, you know, kind of doing this sort of darker poetry thing, everyone's completely all in. And it really is fun to paint a picture that way.
Jumping back in time a little bit too, because something like Cadillaca, it seemed like that gave you time away from the big issues at hand, kind of to be able to have fun and breathe a little bit. But now you have two fully operating bands, and I don't know, I get the sense that it's more opportunities to actually target those bigger issues than just one album at a time.
Yeah, I mean, the times we're living in, to me, are pretty turbulent. And I just think that, I think this record, the Emerald Valley record, it just really came out of that. And we all really wanted a way to express that. And you know, I feel the opportunities I have. I mean, I've been, you know, playing music for a long time, but, you know, life is busy and I have kids and other work and stuff. And so the opportunity, I feel like, to do music with the caliber of the people in Filthy Friends, Scott McCoy, Linda Pittman is drumming now, and Kurt Block, you know, and Peter Buck. I mean, I just felt like, wow, this is a really special opportunity to really stretch myself as a songwriter. And I'm just so proud of what we're able to do. And yeah, and we getting there for me, I like writing all kinds of different songs, but for me, there was some specific things, some political things, some environmental things that I definitely wanted to tackle.
So I'll go into uncharted territory a little bit here, because I do want to ask a few things about Slater Kinney as well, in that you've announced that, you know, you had been working on a record and there is another record on the way. Are you finding that those themes are also finding their way onto that record as well?
It's funny. It's yes, but it's such a completely different record. It's a really super psychic record.
Whoa, what does that mean?
it's very much about, it's a little more personal in a way. Like, I think with Filthy Friends, you know, I'm like writing stories and, you know, and talking about growing up and stuff. But I think the Slater Kinney record, it does touch on some of the same themes, but the characters are even way more personal and even more upset, I guess.
I mean, two records, this is a lot of writing for any artist to take on. And obviously, you know, this is something that you want to do and it sounds like you still love to do. Were you doing these at the same time or was there still some separation in there?
You know, it's funny because there was some writing. Yeah, there was some writing for both bands during a certain period of time where I was like, whoa, this is intense. But yeah, I've really enjoyed it. And it's really been, I really try and take what I can learn from each collaboration and use that experience to try something, you know, different, or try different things in each new song that we do. Like Peter, one thing about Peter that's great is that he really writes a pre-chorus for every single song. He does. And I'm like, what is this part? And he's like, oh, it's a pre-chorus. In Nashville, they call it the ramp up, you know? And Slater Kinney had never written a pre-chorus in our lives, you know? But now I'm like, oh, let's try putting a pre-chorus in here, you know? And it's just, it's like, you know, just things like that are like fun and interesting, just push me forward to keep trying new things.
And of course, that bridges on to bringing in Annie Clark, you know, St. Vincent, into the sessions as well, which I think the line that was put out there was, you all were looking to have some new tools brought in, and maybe that goes beyond what you're saying. Does that just what Annie brings in, or was there more than that?
She's amazing. She's just so great to work with. Wow. Yeah. She brings so much to the table. I cannot even express how, like, so great she is to work with.
I mean, the line I have on my paper, by the way, is all in one word. Holy cow, this is the coolest news of the last at least 5 years, maybe more. I mean, we'll see how it sounds, but I feel pretty confident in that.
Yeah.
I mean, these are you all and her. I mean, these are two of my favorite artists, you know, of all time right here. So this is a fan's dream, I guess. I don't know. I know this is early, but, you know, is there anything you can say about this record? you know, I guess how it differs from the last one.
It was such a dream to get to work with Annie. And, you know, I think that she really pushed us to try new things as a band. I think people are really going to be excited to hear it. It is different, and I'm thrilled with how it turned out.
Is it going to be this year? I mean, are you putting out two records in 2019?
Right? That is a super good question. Like, what is going on with you? I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that, like, you know, I'm 46 and I'm like, oh, wow, I've got to get, you know, got to get stuff done. Yeah. Okay.
To be, you know, so involved now with Filthy Friends, and there is one leg of a tour date out there, does that compromise what's going on there at all? Or are you able to kind of still put it all in on both of them?
Oh, no. It's been great. I mean, I think that, you know, that's one of the benefits of doing this for a while, is that everyone has learned how to plan.
Right.
After many records, you know, you plan things out, and yeah, it's actually going great.
I'll end here. Hot Rocks just celebrated its 20th anniversary. It all tied together for me, in you know, with the song God is a Number, once we really started getting that, because a lot of the things you're talking about peripherally, I think, you know, in that song, growing up on the internet, getting up on TV, which leads us possibly to the themes that's working on these two records right here. I don't know. Do you see that thread at all? Am I stretching
absolutely
here?
No, you're absolutely so right on. I thought about that record kind of a lot this year. Definitely, I feel like we touched on it with the new Slater Kinney record. Yeah, there's definitely moments where I was like, oh yeah, that, you know, it touches on these same themes of feeling that kind of loss of a real community and in favor of our, you know, of our weird electronic isolating society. You know, I think that's something that has some real downsides for where we were at and especially where we're at now. Yeah, that's for sure something that we touch on for Slater Kinney.
It's interesting hearing that record now too, a little aside here, because you know, with no disrespect to the classic albums that come before that, I don't think I have to throw any extra praise there that hasn't already been. But Hot Rocks sort of sounds like the band that you become. Does that make sense? Like that's where you really start to get a sense of even how you know sound these days. It really, to me, it starts with that one.
I really appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, I feel like we had all this success with Dig Me Out, and which was, it kind of came naturally to us, and then it was like, now what? Like, who are you as artists? And you know, like, it was like, well, looks like we'll have to reinvent ourselves, you know? Yeah. And that's so true of just who we are. And I feel like we've done that again in some ways with this new record. We just feel the need to push ourselves, because otherwise it's just, you don't grow as an artist unless you ask more of yourself, I think.
Well, I'm obviously, I love everything that you all do. Trivial question here to end. I heard Carrie's book, The Modern Girl book, is going to be adapted for TV. Does that mean that someone's going to be playing you? And if so, do you have knowledge or a wish of who plays Corin Tucker on TV?
Well, actually, you know, that I think it's kind of to be determined. Yeah, and it's not really my call. But I'm sure she will pick someone awesome, of course.
It's got to be a weird moment. I mean, I think that would be a weird moment anyway. It's surreal, I guess, is really the word. You know?
Surreal, yeah, for sure. And just being like, oh my God, what happened? I'm so old now.
not at all, especially with the fury that you still pump out in this music. I love it so much. And I always enjoy talking with you, too. Thank you, Corin, for taking the time today.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you out there, what it sounds like, plenty this year.
Yeah, for sure.
All right.
Thanks so much, Kyle.
Take care.
All right. Okay, you too.
Bye.
Bye.
My thanks always to Corin Tucker for that call right there. Filthy Friends and the record Emerald Valley, and eventually a Slater Kinney record, hopefully later this year. Now, if you're not familiar with the band Filthy Friends, they also put out a record in 2017, their debut record, and I also got to talk with Corin back then about that as well. It's a little bonus time here. It's part two of Kyle Meredith with Corin Tucker.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm well. How are you?
Good.
I think the most obvious place then, as we're talking about Filthy Friends, the newest supergroup on the block, is the formation. I mean, that's where you start. What's the story of this whole thing? How it came together and how you guys went from there to here?
Well, it started, I think, back in, I want to say 2012. Peter Buck was working on a solo album, and he and Scott McCoy reached out to me and asked to sing on a song on the album. And the song was Nothing Means Nothing. And I was like really excited because I was a huge fan of REM and Peter's work. And so that was, you know, really fun. And then after we did that collaboration, Peter called me and said, well, we should make an album together.
Like you do.
Okay, you know, like totally shocked and really surprised. So that's basically how it started.
And then getting in there and putting the rest of the band together. I mean, was it Peter making the call? Because it makes most sense with Minus Five and all of that. But, I mean, how did everybody else fall into place?
Yeah, I mean, it was mostly, you know, other people that Peter had collaborated with, people that played on his solo album or that he'd worked with in REM or Minus Five. And, you know, I mean, it's just such a funny thing to write music with someone that you don't know very well. You don't know how it's going to go and what their process is like or if you're going to feel comfortable with it at all. And I was surprised at how comfortable I felt and how at home I felt with like his kind of process. You know, some people are really like uptight or they have a certain way of they want to do things, and he's totally the opposite. You know, like he's really open to all kinds of all different avenues of songwriting, which I really enjoy.
Is this the first time it was like this for you in this scenario? Because as I look back, you know, your bands have always been your bands or the bands that, you know, you were had some leadership in and everything. And is this the first time where you kind of fell in with a completely different group of people and had to find that groove, that communication?
Yes, for sure. You know, they have all worked together quite a lot, and I was the new kid on the block. That's really challenging. And I have to say, I was pretty quiet, you know, like just trying to figure everyone out for a while. But I did immediately feel like all the doors were wide open. So I felt immediately comfortable saying like, no, we need, you know, double the chorus or this needs to be shorter or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I immediately felt like my voice was really heard by everyone.
And you guys come out at first, as everyone said, oh, they're a Bowie tribute act.
And then,
which I guess now, given this story, you guys knew what you were long before we did. So that was a nice little sidestep. I don't know. Take the pressure off?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just funny. People really want to get a story on things or you know, they want a, like a complete idea of what the band is supposed to be. And this is really like we don't know what we are, you know. We just like writing music, and we perform kind of when it works out, when it fits everyone's really busy schedule, you know, so we're ready for things to like transform and yeah, maybe one night we will be a Bowie tribute band and another night we'll be a Prince tribute band or, you know, just whatever we need to be in the moment is totally fine with everyone.
How cool is that to have that kind of freedom with any act, you know?
Yeah.
Especially when, I mean, I think you could do that with any band that you're in, but everyone does have certain expectations when you step out there with Sleater-Kinney or I guess even the Corin Tucker band, but to have something where it really is just completely free-flowing from the very beginning, like how often you could surprise everybody with whatever.
Yeah, that's something that is really special about, you know, finding people that are really open to collaborate with and, you know, aren't uptight about what's going to happen on stage. They're just ready for, you know, for what unfolds.
Well, let's talk about a few of the songs that is out there that I've heard. Of course, the newest single with Any Kind of Crowd, which just stopped me as soon as I heard it. Like, it's you, and it's definitely you. And then I thought, and I don't think she's ever sounded like Chrissy Hynde before, but there's something almost pretenders-y about this. And I don't, it's something the way you're about, you're phrasing it and the melody and the delivery.
Wow, that's an awesome compliment. I mean, of course, I'm a huge fan, so that's awesome.
It's in there. What's the story of that song, if there is a story?
I think that, you know, I mean, Peter just comes up with these guitar riffs that just floor me, right? Like, he played that for me and I was like, whoa, but like, I have to sort of play it cool a little bit and be like, okay, yeah, I'll come up with something. And sometimes it takes me a while to go away for a couple of days and think of, you know, what kind of is the setting for this song. And in my mind, like, this party, you know, just like popped in my mind. And, you know, it was about like meeting someone at a party and kind of like the very beginning of what might be a relationship, just that feeling of like butterflies in your stomach. And so I kind of go on instinct and feeling and writing and singing how I might have felt at that moment, I guess.
So lyrically, you just sort of approach this the way you would always approach songwriting.
Yeah, it's interesting because it is always the same way I approach songwriting, which is I have to have some kind of idea and then I just build around it. But I think that the guitar is so, to me, like, sometimes it's just really evocative, all this, you know, the kind of jangly string thing that Peter does, like, really those brings out a lot of emotions for me because I've been a fan of it, you know, for most of my life. And so these, like, images kind of pop in my mind, and then I kind of write from there.
You guys coming out as part of that 30 Songs, 30 Days series, it's sort of a big statement now that we look at it as that was your debut, or whatever you want to say, the official uncovering. And given, you know, the climate of everything, can we expect more of that with what you guys are doing?
I hope so. I mean, I think that that's the great thing I feel about collaborating with everyone in the band is that, like I said, the doors are wide open. Everyone's really passionate, and there's not anything that would be like off limits. You know, I mean, certainly being the singer and the songwriter, you know I'm really super outspoken, and they're totally cool with it. You know, if I see an email like, hey, there's a cause that I'm passionate about and I want to donate a song to it, you know, everyone's like, cool, let's do it, you know. Or the, you know, the compilation that Janet and Sam put together that was a you know, a benefit for the ACLU. You know, we went into the studio for one day and wrote a song for it, that Love in the Time of Resistance song. And that was super fun because we spent a week, wrote a song, recorded it, and got it on the compilation.
Just to move that quickly. It is impressive, again, with everyone's schedules.
Yes. Yeah, it really is. And that is the thing that I really enjoy about this collaboration, is there is that wealth of experience and just, you know, the stewardship of knowing what sounds good and what doesn't immediately. You know, so when it does come time to like, okay, let's write a song, let's do it in the studio, and, you know, it just happened really quickly, which was super fun.
Is the Roxy Music cover, is that just going to live as a B-side, or do you see adding that to the bigger collection?
I don't know. I think for now it's super cool as a B-side. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were like, yeah, we need a B-side for the 7-inch, so...
I get the sense that you don't know exactly what's to come with Filthy Friends. I mean, is there a bigger plan that's already in play right now, or are you guys still filling it out?
I think we're still filling it out. The songwriting stuff is really, you know, it feels like it's really going somewhere. So hopefully there's more music to come, you know, at the very least.
I hope so, too. You've already got me baited, so now I'm a greedy fan, so keep it coming.
Okay.
With the rest of the stuff, I guess I wouldn't be doing my job without asking about your other groups with Slater, with the Corn and Tucker Band. Is there any future plans this year with any of that?
Right now, we're kind of in the writing phase. So, you know, we're slowly kind of pulling some things together.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we'll be watching and listening.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
You too.
All right. Take care. Bye.
All right. Bye.
To 2017 interview with Corin Tucker, talking about the debut Filthy Friends record. And how about one more? All the way back to 2010. I think this was the first time I ever talked with Corin Tucker. She had just put out a solo LP under the Corin Tucker Band, where we also talked about the term mom rock. This one's fun, too. Part 3, Kyle Meredith with Corin Tucker. The term mom disc seems to be thrown around a lot right now. I believe you may have even said it once yourself. Is that bothersome that people are kind of pegging it as that?
I am totally to blame for that publicity nightmare.
Yeah.
I'm the one to blame. I don't know. I guess that if I was my own publicist, I'd fire myself. I don't know. I was trying to say that I was thinking this is a more mature record, and I think it does reflect in some ways being a little bit older. Maybe being a parent is part of this record, and I just think that society has such a negative view of a mom and a woman getting older that in a way that it kind of makes me feel rebellious. Like, screw you, I'm taking back mom rock for everyone, you know.
Well, I don't think you've ever had a problem bringing the rock anyway. I mean, with your past and everything, it's definitely there. There are a few tracks on this disc, Doubt and even Riley to a point, that really harken back to your older sound and what people might know you for the best. Did you go into the album thinking you wanted to write one of those songs or that you needed to write one of those songs?
No, I mean, honestly, I think Doubt really came about by Seth and Sarah and I kind of messing around in his basement studio and just kind of out of the joy of rocking out together. I mean, really, I thought this was going to be a very acoustic record in my mind. I had like a lot of really quiet, very simple songs. And when Seth and I started working together, Seth produced and arranged the whole album. He had some very different ideas. So some of the songs were brought fully into, like a very sweeping ballad, or, like Half a World was taken from a really quiet ballad into this total English beat rock song. So we went a lot of different places with the songs, and we just enjoyed it.
Did you find it difficult to write this time? I mean, I don't know exactly how you wrote while you were in Sleater-Kinney, but, if it was with the other two or if you usually brought it in. But did you find the writing differently this time around, that it was, for the most part, your name and your face only this time?
Well, yeah, I mean, I took my time, and, I just kind of came back to the songs until I felt that they were completed and they were finished pieces. So I think that was a little bit more different. But, it's basically the same process. I mean, you come up with an idea, and then you work on it till you feel like it's a finished piece. So I don't think my songwriting process has changed that much, but I do, I did finish the whole song this time with lyrics and, introduction and everything. So.
Did you have this album in mind even as, Sleater-Kinney was calling it a day?
I think everybody has a list in their mind of things they would like to do, and you don't always get the opportunity to do all of them, but I got the opportunity to do this, and I feel really fortunate that it all kind of came together.
Considering the subtle changes in the sound of this disc, at least, do you have an idea of maybe where you want to take it from here in your career? I mean, I hate to ask the yearbook question, but where do you see yourself as a songwriter in 10 years from now, if you do it all?
Music industry is so tumultuous right now. It's difficult to plan, a career path that would make sense. I don't know if it makes sense at all. I feel like, like getting a hot dog cart on the street might make more sense right now. I don't know. I love doing music. I absolutely love it, and I think I'll continue to do it in form,
Okay.
In the future.
Well, we certainly hope so. We're big fans of it down here in Louisville, and hopefully eventually your tours will bring us back this way again. And thanks so much for taking some time. It sounds like you're in a little bit of a busy spot up there. So
yeah, it's definitely busy, but we definitely hope to come to Louisville again.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
All the way back in 2010 there with Corin. And again, thanks so much. Looking really, really forward to the Filthy Friends record. Emerald Valley, again, is the title for that one. And if you haven't already, please do hit that subscribe button before we get out of here. Again, you can subscribe to us on YouTube, on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Acast, wherever you get your favorite podcasts from. After that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern, where you can also find some bonus episodes of this series over there. consequenceofsound.net. They've got all of your music and film news needs. You can find me at Twitter at Kyle Meredith, Facebook/Kyle Meredith. That's it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.